Special funding for the podcast of On Point is provided by Boston University School of Law, dedicated to excellence in teaching and to preparing our graduates to hit the ground running.
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Multitasking, we all do it, some of us more than others. In the media age, it's easy, maybe too easy, to do it a lot, for work, for fun. For many, multitasking is just life now, but is it costing us something? New research out of Stanford University suggests yes, it is. This hour, On Point, the age and price of multitasking. Joining me today from Stanford, California is Clifford Nass. He's communications professor at Stanford University, co-author of a recent study on multitasking, which has garnered a lot of attention since it was published in the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences. Clifford Nass, thanks very much for being here.
Delighted to be here. Thank you.
And with me in the studio this hour, two bright young multitaskers. Vivian Ho, 20, originally from Westboro, Massachusetts, a junior at Boston University, where she's editor-in-chief of the student newspaper, The Daily Free Press. Vivian, thanks very much for coming in.
Thank you.
And Jack LaPierre, 21, born in Waco, Texas, grew up in the Northeast, a senior at Emerson College, director at WERS, the college radio station there. Two newsies here, that figures. Jack, welcome.
It's a pleasure to be here.
It's great to have you both. You are our generational reality check through this hour. But Clifford Nass, let me come to you. What did you go into this study looking for? What did you find?
Well, we had noticed that there was a dramatic growth in the amount of multitasking, especially among younger people. And we went in trying to find what was the special ability that these teenagers and other multitaskers have that enable them to do what classical psychology would say is impossible. And to make a long story short, it turns out nothing. In fact, they seem to be worse at all aspects of multitasking.
We read Ellen Goodman, you probably saw it, the national columnist, syndicated columnist, saying that she read about your report. She said she had always imagined that people watching TV while twittering and surfing the web had a secret skill, like polyphonics, who could sing two notes at the same time. You were looking for that secret skill, and instead?
Exactly, but we were looking for it, and instead we found they not only have no secret skill, they actually have deficits in virtually every aspect of attention we can find.
Now, what do you mean by that?
Well, first of all, we thought that multitaskers would be better at distinguishing between relevant and irrelevant information and be able to rapidly decide that. In fact, they're actually suckers for irrelevancy. They're more likely to be distracted by irrelevant information than are low multitaskers.
So heavy multitaskers were not better at perceiving lots of things well at the same time?
Actually, they were worse. So we were quite shocked.
That seems like, though, a contradiction in, I don't know, realities. I mean, if they're not better at it or even good at it, why would they be doing it?
That is actually a great mystery. Not only are they worse at filtering out irrelevancy, the memory they do put into their brain is actually much more disorganized. And they're even worse at switching from one task to another, which, after all, one would have thought is the definition of multitasking. So we are absolutely baffled as to what's going on.
I'm going to put this to our 20-somethings in just a second here. But to clarify, you were talking primarily, and I guess this is reasonable, about media multitasking, about what, tweeting and texting and IMing and video chatting and watching TV, talking on the iPhone all at the same time.
Precisely, yes. The literature on what we would call sort of real-world multitasking has different results. We haven't studied that, and it's likely different. We're focusing on media multitasking.
And there, even though it didn't involve, you know, walking and chewing gum and spinning plates, you're saying even if it's just media multitasking, it doesn't get done well. In fact, are you saying that it actually sort of hurts the brain, that it robs it of capacity somehow?
We don't know whether it's hurting the brain or whether people with brains that are deficient in these ways multitask. We don't know which is cause and which is effect, but there's no question that regardless of causality, high multitaskers should not be multitasking.
Okay. Vivian, Jack, you're 20-something. You're listening to our esteemed August Stanford professor who has found that when you multitask, you're not proving a skill. You're actually working on a deficit. I don't, Vivian, how does this strike you?
Well, first, ouch.
But
Yeah, I don't know. I kind of disagree with that. You know, I don't think we have a deficit in any way. You know, we have a lot to juggle at once. Jack and I were both students. Mm-hmm. We both are running news organizations. Mm-hmm. And now with the news industry and the way it's changing, we need to be able to work.
You're being told be ready to do everything.
Exactly.
Interview and take pictures and take video and
exactly.
File it all. And so, Jack, is this just the world you live in, you're going to live in? Multitasking is baked in the cake. You have to do it?
It's not so much that we want to do it. It's we cannot operate without multitasking these days.
What do you mean by that?
Well, I mean, I for one, work 70 hours a week.
Mm-hmm.
In order for me to get enough sleep to function, I have to multitask. I have to be, you know, at the radio station. I have to be watching mm-hmm. CNN. I also have to be reading The Wires. I have to be listening to whichever radio station I'm listening to. I need to be able to get all this media at once. And of course, yeah, we're going to see something's going to get lost in translation. We're mm-hmm. not going to be able to get everything all at once.
But what about, I mean, in the study that Clifford Nass and his crew have done, mm-hmm. the suggestion is that you're doing all that, but you're living in toto a lesser life somehow because you're not perceiving any of these things very well. And when you jump between them, you're not shifting between them very well.
Well, it's...
Is that just a diss from an older generation?
Well, I mean... You know, I'm going to put my pride aside for a second. Far be it from a 21-year-old to try and discredit an expert in his field. I'm not going to even go there. But it's like I said, we have to do it. We can't live our lives without multitasking these days because there simply is not enough time in the day. I go to class. I work at a radio station. I also work on the weekends from 8 a.m. until 8 p.m. I have to be doing multiple things at once. Otherwise, I'm not going to sleep.
Clifford Nass in California. All right, there it is. Vivian and Jackson, they have to do it. You say that when they do it, they end up not better off but worse off. So is this a doomed generation?
Well, it's a good question, and they very well, if not doomed, they're in a position that their brains are not equipped for, and that's never pretty. We don't know what to do. I mean, the problem, of course, in certain businesses like news is it's not just consuming a great deal. It's consuming it at a given time. So there's no question that if you could space out the timing, so, you know, tape CNN and all these other things and do them serially, it would be quicker, more efficient, better on your brain. But this issue of needing everything at the moment, you know, having to respond to instant messaging in seconds and having to know what's going on in multiple places at once really is a conundrum. The concern, though, is regardless of whether it's a conundrum or not, if it's bad for the brain, that certainly is a sacrifice that this generation is taking on.
Well, two things there. The brain not equipped for this, you say, and then bad for the brain. But the first, what do you mean the brain's not equipped for this? We're told we only use 10% of our, you know, mental capacity. Why not just multitask to the max?
The problem is, because of the way our brains are built, at the end of the day, we can only really do one thing at a time. So what our brain is good at but not great at is switching from one task to another rapidly. Unfortunately, the high multitaskers are worse at that and slower at that than are the non-multitaskers.
And it's bad for our brain? Did your study really show that it's eroding some capacity that would have been there otherwise?
We don't know the cause and effect. Again, the issue is there is a possibility which we're intending to explore that doing this all the time erodes our brain. There's another possibility that people whose brains are built not to handle multitasking for reasons we don't fully understand are attracted to multitasking.
Do you ever worry that this is sort of like the generation that said rock and roll would destroy, you know, the new generation? I mean, do you ever feel like that? I look back at the headlines, and there's headline after headline in recent years, all, you know, up in arms about multitasking. Does it make you feel like a tisk, you know, old guy Clifford?
Well, I live in a college dormitory here at Stanford, so
oh, geez.
I'm very sensitive to telling my kids, you know, what to do. This is really the first study that looks at people who chronically multitask. There were really no studies on people who chronically listen to rock and roll music. I'm hoping, frankly, that we find something multitaskers are in fact great at so that we can play to that strength. But as of now, what we're finding are negatives.
Oh, wow. Vivian, there's another casual diss. They're hoping to find something
hoping,
that you're
hoping.
Great at. Something hoping.
maybe someday.
I'm on your side.
One day. Well, see, I have a question for you, Mr. Nass. What makes you think we can't learn to multitask? You know, like, it's an evolutionary process every day. You know, you're learning how to do something. For example, like, I'm pretty much nocturnal right now. Like, I haven't gone to sleep yet. It's like, this is something you learn. You're not born nocturnal. You're not born a multitasker. But it's something you learn how to do.
Great question, well, Professor Nass.
Well, we truly expected that. I mean, we entered this research because, you know, I adore my kids in the dorm. And I was awed at how well they seemingly multitask. So all of us, all the researchers on the study, expected that by doing it a lot, you would get better. So we're frankly surprised, worried, puzzled that they get worse. So we don't know why practice makes people worse rather than better.
But over time, I mean, whether in an individual life or in humanity, plugged into media as we are, might we not just get better at this? Maybe this is a capacity we're taking on. Wasn't it Socrates who complained about reading and writing and said it, you know, destroyed our memory, and that worked out all right?
Well, the difference, of course, is that we are studying kids who are chronically multitasking. So these are people who are multitasking, you know, throughout their lives. And so unlike reading and writing, we just seem to get worse at it.
Our listeners for just a moment. Nashville, Tennessee. Michael, you're on the air, Michael.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
First and foremost, I am 23 years old, okay. And I hate multitasking.
Why?
I have to do it. Well, I have to do it during the day. I actually deliver produce, and I work for a very specialized boutique company. And
yeah.
During the day, I'm constantly taking orders and dealing with issues and fixing things, and I have to write stuff down. And then I get home at the end of the day with this really bad feeling going, did I get everything done today? And sometimes it really worries me because a lot of the stuff that I do during the day has to get done to ensure more business for the next day. And
So you've been multitasking all day long. When you get home, you've had enough of it.
Exactly. But I sit there and for a good 2 hours, I'm worried. Did I get everything done today? And so my observation is that this seems to be a war of quantity over quality. And I base that observation on television advertisements and the fact that it's way more about cramming 7 or 8 30-second commercials into that 4-minute time slot that they have. They don't really want you to think about the things that they're showing you. They just want to give you enough information to make you want the product and then go out and buy it. It's not relevant, or it's not even quality information. It's just quantity and quantity and quantity, and that's what my salary is based on, is how much of that I can get done during the day, not how much detailed information I can bring back to the office.
Quantity versus quality, and you're paid for quantity. You multitask for quantity in a way that goes right to Clifford Nass's thesis. Let us hold that, Michael, in Nashville, and get one more right here. Woodstock, Connecticut. Jim, you're on the air.
Yes, hello, this is Jim. How are you all? Thanks for taking my call.
Sure. What do you think, Jim?
Well, I was calling because earlier on in the show, there was a distinction made by your guest about serious work-related multitasking and what is now being discussed, it appears to me a little more, as more casual multitasking of IMs and Facebook and all of that. And it appears to me that the two guests that the young people you have on are doing this in a work-related way, and that they seem to be the type of people that would be concentrating because it is of importance as opposed to more social networking. And I want to see where one cuts off, and also, how were people selected for the study?
Let us pick all that up, Jim. I'll come first to my young multitaskers. Jack, for work or casual, or is there really a difference? I mean, I know a lot of young people who may be studying and video chatting and have a movie running in the corner of the laptop, and of course the texts come in and IMs go out. Work, casual, is it all the same?
Oh, absolutely. There's absolutely a difference. When I'm in the newsroom and I'm working on whatever I have to get for the next newscast,
right?
Absolutely, I'm focusing all my faculties on that. Problem is my faculties are, let's say, 25% CNN, 25% AP Newswire, 25% what I need to write myself.
It is media multitasking, but it's work-related.
It's absolutely work-related information. Let's say I go home and I go on Instant Messenger or I'm watching TV. Of course, I'm going to be less distracted because I'm relaxed. I'm not it's not a matter of, you know, if I get fired, if I'm not focusing at all times.
Now, Vivian Michael in Nashville says, look, he doesn't really like this because he's driven to do it all day long and then he's fed up with it. You guys are in media, so of course you're going to be bathed in media all day long. Mm-hmm. But what do you say to Michael's observation that what's being pushed here, Vivian, and it could be the case in anyone's life, is quantity of stuff, data, images, you name it, not quality. Is the sky less blue to you? Do strawberries taste, smell less sweet, multitasker?
See, I don't understand why you can't have quantity and quality. You know, I feel like at the same time, we can have both now. For example, you're talking about how in the newsroom, you know, it's CNN here and, you know, the Newswire here. For the Daily Free Press, we are kind of we work more locally. We work more with BU. So it is a lot of social networking at the same time. Mm-hmm. We do follow things on Twitter. For example,
Facebook matters to you. Twitter matters to you. These are sources of information.
You find
you
a
need.
Lot of information mm-hmm. that you wouldn't think you wouldn't find. For example, yesterday, Michael Flaherty's his announcement about Sam Yoon running as his deputy mayor.
These are two candidates for Boston mayor who've now joined forces. Yes, so okay, you're following local politics.
We find that on Twitter. Mm-hmm. And BPD's Boston Police Department, they have their own Twitter too. That's how we follow it.
So you have to be out there. Clifford Nass, you're listening to all this and our callers. You heard Jim ask how you selected the people that you talked to, and you heard Michael say, you know, he's tired of it at work, but the quantity requirement is there. Vivian says it is just the job. It's just life.
Well, I think it certainly is a job. The distinction between multitasking for entertainment and for work is actually blurring. Many companies now are requiring people to have multiple chat windows open, except it's not their friends, it's their coworkers, and to respond to emails very quickly, etc. So there's no question that the workplace, as well as, you know, personal space, has become much more inundated with and designed for multitasking. The question is the bottom line positive or negative? That is, if we're creating a generation of workers who are attending less, having less attention, having less ability to keep their memory in neat order to task switch, we may be actually damaging the workforce in some profound ways. I fully understand and am incredibly sympathetic to people who have to do it, but then the question becomes, are we structuring work in such a way that we're making people's brains worse? If we had people working in coal mines with dangerous gases, we wouldn't just say, well, hey, you know, you're going to die, but, you know, we got to dig that coal or what have you.
I'm sure we did say that for a long time, but hopefully not.
That's
so
right. That's right. And we're doing that right now, I think, with multitasking. So there's a really provocative question about whether, if this is in fact damaging to the brain, whether we shouldn't start thinking about structuring work differently, just as we did do with coal miners.
That is interesting. A generation in the coal mine of multitasking that may not see it that way. I want to get another perspective in here, maybe some biological science. Marcel just joins us from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, professor of psychology at Carnegie Mellon University. He co-directs the Brain Imaging Research Center there. Marcel Just, thanks very much for being here.
Great to be here, Tom.
You have said that multitasking is a way of thinking, but you've also said that there's a biological upper limit on how much thinking can occur at any given time. Tell us about that limit first, and then if it is a way, how do these two things fit together?
Well, you know how difficult it is to think through some things. You know, if I ask you to square a three-digit number in your head, it's going to be almost painful. It'll take a long time. It just, you can only do so much thinking per unit time. But life is a multitask. Many things are happening. Life is multimedia, multitask. You can only do so much at a time. What happens when you're forced or try very hard to do multiple things at the same time, you get a little bit of a brownout. There are limits. The brain is a wonderful organ, but it's a biological thinking machine, and that means it has limits.
So could you describe some of the biology of those limits to us? Because we always hear that we just use a small portion of our brain. People might think, well, you know, I'll just open it up a little wider. I'll just hit the gas a little harder, and I can do four things at once. Why not?
You can hit the gas a little harder, but there's an upper limit. You know, at some point, the pedal reaches the metal. And the 10%, I don't know what that exactly refers to. Actually, if you look at brain activity, the amount of the brain that's activated at any one time is maybe even less than 10%.
Mm-hmm.
So you have a huge potential there, but you only use a small amount of it at one time. But you can't really use an enormously larger amount. So as you try harder to increase the number of tasks you process, what happens is you end up allocating fewer resources to each of the participating tasks. A critical area that I do research in is using cell phones while driving.
Okay, that's critical.
We have people doing a driving task mm-hmm. while they're in an MRI scanner. Now, it's a simulator, and they're steering a car along a windy road, and mm-hmm. it's somewhat demanding. It's not horribly demanding. All of our participants could do it, but it takes, you know, you have to concentrate.
Mm-hmm.
And we measure the brain activity, you know, a set of brain areas activates while they're doing this driving. Then we have, they're wearing earphones, and there's somebody speaking over the earphones to simulate listening to a cell phone.
Right.
What happens when that speaking starts is that the brain activity associated with the driving goes down by 37%.
So if you extrapolate from that, do you then resonate with Professor Nass's sort of metaphor saying that multitasking may be the coal mine of the modern workforce, that we may actually be damaging the contemporary workforce, even these 20-somethings sitting with me right now, Vivian and Jack, by this multitasking, that it's a kind of occupational hazard or life hazard, Marcel Just?
Well, I think that that one can provide too much, and the current contemporary technology makes it possible to have so many streams of information available that you know that you can't that you don't process any one of them decently. And some of them, by the way, get in automatically. You can't willfully gate them out. If someone's speaking and you can hear it, it gets into your brain and consumes resources. So I think the issue, I think Professor Nass said something like this, given this kind of society and technology that has that information available there, I think it is appropriate to think about how to structure it so that you get the best possible performance.
And what about...
I'm sure we're not damaging our brains, but there are ways to develop the information such that the performance is optimized. Now, it's always going to be poorer on each of two tasks than if those tasks are performed alone. There's no getting away from that.
What about getting around this? My young guest Vivian suggests that you can get around it kind of as an act of will. I'm just determined to do all these things at once, and so I will. Or an act of evolution. It may have been harder, but now this is the world we live in, and we adapt to it. Is it possible that there's a framing element here that, you know, a lot of things seem like they're getting done at once, but actually they're just being intercut. They're being done separately, you know, little bits of time that are kind of mushed together, but not actually overlapping, Professor Just?
Well, I think some things really are overlapping. Sometimes you can hear two people speaking at the same time, and you can process both of those speech streams. So it's not impossible to have two simultaneous streams of thought occurring, and that's the kind of research that I've been focusing on. But back to Vivian and your point, and can you get better at it? Can you learn, and so on? I don't think that the very few studies have studied training or learning of multitasking. I think in most things, and I think somebody said this, in most tasks you get better with practice. And I would suspect that one could get better with practice while multitasking. You're still not going to do as well on a task if you're sharing with another one than if you're doing it alone, but I think the sharing could get better with practice.
Clifford Nass, I want to bring that to you, but I want to get some listeners in here as well. Janelle in Boston, you're on the air, Janelle. What do you think on the multitasking front?
Hi, Tom. Thanks for having me.
Yeah.
I just wanted to throw out there that I think sort of wasn't touched, and I'm 27. I'm not sure if they just said that. So a little, you know, in with the 20-something.
Yeah, yeah.
And I just think that there's sort of a sensory overload piece that hasn't necessarily been touched on, and I actually agree with sort of the findings of the study. I actually have a sister that is like, she'll be on the Xbox talking on the phone and texting at the same time while trying to have a conversation with me. And I just think that it is sort of this piece, like I said, of the sensory overload, which makes sense to me that if it's sort of damaging the brain, that it's just, or maybe not damaging it, but that it's just too much going on at one time.
Is this a younger sister, we take it, Janelle?
Yes.
And you look at her and say, how can you live like that? What are you doing?
Well, sort of. I mean, I'm the oldest, so that comes in either way. But definitely, she'll be texting, and I stop talking, and she says, I'm listening to you, but to me, she's not, because there's too many things going on at once.
Vivian Ho is rolling her eyes ever so slightly. Maybe she's in the younger sister's shoes here. Vivian, what do you say?
Well, I actually kind of agree with what Janelle said. You know, you learn to filter. And so, like, when I'm looking at the Twitter, you know, I'm looking at this and that, you know, I automatically go to Michael Flaherty's, which is saying there's a big news piece going on. And I ignore my friend that's saying, oh, I ate my favorite burrito today, you know, that sort of thing. But at the same time, like, that takes away, like, I'm not sure about the biological.
Burrito's one thing. What if they're saying, oh, the building's on fire?
Well, you know, I feel like that is news right there. So,
there you go.
Well, yeah, you learn to filter, but at the same time, it's what you're filtering out that kind of matters, you know? So when your friend's telling you about a big life problem, but at the same time, you're talking to another editor about fact checking and about what's right in the story, you know, it's sort of what you choose from then on.
Clifford Nass, can we get better with practice? The question Marcel just raises.
Well, we certainly thought people would. However, so far, the suggestive evidence is, in fact, we get worse with practice. That is, the people who are doing it most frequently seem to be worse at it. Now, again, it could be that they're getting better at some ability we haven't identified or found. But the problem is this happens many times. When you ask the brain to do more than it can do, it doesn't always find the best route. In fact, sometimes it ends up doing everything worse just because you're asking it to do something that's very difficult for it. Just as if you push a car too far, everything gets worse. The car doesn't learn to be better. In fact, you get problems with the tires and the brake and this. So we may be seeing a phenomenon of that kind.
Charleston, South Carolina. You're on the air, Judy.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I'm a college professor, and I wanted to comment that in my experience, people who are multitasking always think they're doing better at it than they really are.
what do you mean? What does it look like from your perspective?
Well, when you're on the road and people are, you know, when I'm on the interstate and people are talking on the phone, I'm sure they think they're doing a great job driving, but 9 times out of 10, they're going 20 miles an hour under the, you know, slower, or they're all over the road. In the same way, if someone's talking to you on the telephone and they're working on their computer, there are those big, long pauses.
You can hear the distraction in their voice. And what about your students, Professor Judy? What do you see in them?
Well, I think they do a great job of multitasking. Now, I'm not sure I agree with that.
Is this just a generational thing? Is this just a different way of going about life that you don't like because you didn't grow up with it, doing it yourself, Judy? What do you think?
Well, I don't think so. It's possible. It's possible. But I just don't see people doing as great at it and as attending as well to multiple things as they perceive that they are. I perceive that they're doing more poorly than they do.
Judy, thanks for your call. Jack, how about it? It's easy to hear this as a generational judgment, but take it seriously for a minute. People who didn't grow up with all this media did things differently, looking at how you and Vivian and others are doing it and saying, you're not doing as well as you think.
Well, I mean, it's sort of like that thing, everyone says they're a good driver, but if everyone was
but
a good
somebody dri- runs yeah, over exactly. the phone pole.
Exactly. Everyone says they're a good driver, but chances are at least half of you are below average. And I think it's sort of the same thing with multitasking. We all think we're doing a better job. We all think that we're getting all the information, but the fact is, and I speak from experience, we're not. What I do when I'm multitasking is I'm not trying to soak up every little detail of everything.
Yeah.
I'm trying to get the gist of what do I think I need to know? What's important here? What's important there?
Is it possible that you get the gist of life but don't get the
depths of life, the sauce, the spice,
the je ne sais quoi? What?
That's very possible. I would have to try maybe not multitask for a week. I'll take a vacation and I'll let you know.
Vivian, what do you say? You hear Judy. She says she's got students your age. She says you think you're doing great, but she doesn't think so.
Well, you know, I stick by my point. You know, it's something you learn how to do. You can learn to be a great multitasker, or you can learn to, you know, you have to learn how to adjust. Like, for example, as editor-in-chief, I have to edit every story that comes through every night.
Mm-hmm.
I have to look at the layout. I have to approve the photos, this and that, and all that. At first, I was, you know, it's scary. I wouldn't leave the office until about 9 a.m. or 10 a.m. After getting there, you know, at 5:30 p.m. the day before. But as time goes on, it's getting easier for me to do. I understand what has to happen. I understand how to juggle this. I know that during my downtime, I can start playing with the layout. I know while I'm waiting for this event story to come in, I can start looking at the photos.
Clifford Ness, how about it? I mean, Vivian Ho does it for her student newspaper in 2009. I don't know. Ben Franklin did it for his own newspaper, you know, hundreds of years ago, and he had to edit and lay out and set type and probably a bunch of other things we don't even have to do now. I don't know, churn butter. is it possible that, you know, we've always had this capacity? Is it something about the media multitasking, the different streams of, you know, data coming in that sets this age apart?
Well, we've watched editors as they do their work, and generally the types of things that Vivian is describing are not really trying to be done simultaneously. It's very rare that someone can sit down and edit a story and halfway through do something else. So there's certainly a difference between very rapidly doing a task, then doing the next one, then doing the next one. Editors in particular are famous for that, and I'm sure Vivian's extremely good at it. That's different than trying to literally do them all simultaneously. That is, you know, read a half a sentence of the story, edit that, and then go back and do some layout, and then go back and read another half sentence. That's the type of thing we're talking about that's, you know, basically impossible. But learning to do a single thing more rapidly, of course, that certainly happens all the time.
Let me get a call from Carol in Salem, Massachusetts. Carol, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I would like to find out if the researcher has done any studies regarding the difference between genders and how males and females multitask, and also if there's been a study regarding the difference in age groups. I'd say specifically people 35 and older. As a mother and a wife, I feel that I multitask out of necessity, and I've been doing it for years, and I think that a lot of women could find themselves understanding and relating to that.
Carol, that's fine. I heard a lot of women respond to it just that way. Hey, women have multitasked forever. Professor Ness, did you make any distinctions based on gender, on age?
That's absolutely true. There's a large body of research that when it comes to real-world multitasking, women are, in fact, better than men, and there's evolutionary explanations for that. In the case of attention and the types of media multitasking, all the research points to no differences between men and women. So that seems to be a big difference between media and the real world. As far as age, we've only studied this age group so far, but we're actually planning on the one hand, another colleague is doing fourth graders, and another colleague is doing 50-year-old plus pilots.
What was the age range of those that you did study, Professor? Were they college
age? They were 18, yes. The first study we did was college age, so we're definitely expanding this out, and we compared college age high to low multitaskers, but There's absolutely no question that we want to explore other age groups. But so far, as I say, there's a large literature. Gender matters a great deal in multitasking in the physical world, and almost none or none that we can find in the media world.
In college age, you would think people should be the best at this because they have grown up in the maelstrom of all this media. Let me go to Marlboro, Vermont, and Kenny. Kenny, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I'm 22, college student, activist from Marlboro College, and a sociology student, and I'm very dedicated to multimedia communication and trying to communicate to a broader audience.
Mm-hmm.
I use film, photography, and written notes, but I've observed in the field, for one, while researching architects, having a little meeting casually at a cafe, that when they have their computers and all of this media, they basically, there's a huge lag time between communication in the real world.
You mean you're all sitting there around the table talking but doing other things, and so what? It slows down? There's a lag? What?
That they can't communicate effectively in reality with each other. Instead, they're too busy with the media in front of them. And I'm really, I just really want to take this to and try to confront Vivian and Jack. And I mean, in my own life, I know trying to read all the op-eds, listen to all the Tom Ashbrook I can, I lose major themes in my own work. I lose most of the news I'm reading. It all just sort of comes through, and I'm not able to digest it all.
Let us pick it up. Vivian, okay, everybody's talking and, you know, tweeting and Facebooking, and at the same time, does it all slow down? Do you just, are you sometimes not able to, I mean, do you have these weird conversations where everybody's talking to each other sort of, but doing six other things and it's not really happening?
I kind of actually agree with that. You know, I feel like our generation's a little bit socially inept.
I take offense to that.
Jack's not so sure because of multitasking, maybe?
I wouldn't say multitasking. I would say the options.
Options.
The options. Yeah, we...
Meaning the multiple options.
But not multiply at the same time, not necessarily. It's just right now, you know, we have all this technology in front of us. And while it's not, like, you know, we're not doing it all at the same time always, and that's not causing this social ineptness, you know, it's, you know, middle school girls not wanting to confront each other when they're angry. They're texting each other instead of texting their friends, you know? And it's not, you know, instead of, like, talking to your roommate, you're sending a Facebook message.
And, Jack, I mean, I've seen, how many times do you see now in the middle of a sentence, someone's finishing a sentence, but they're also reading a text while
I do it all the time.
And what happens to the last half of that sentence? How serious is it?
What generally happens is you start talking, you start expressing an idea, and then there's just sort of about a 5-second pause, and you say, wait a minute, what was I just talking about?
Hello.
And I do it all the time. I'll be talking to my dad, I'll be talking to my mom, I'll be talking to reporters in the field. At the same time, I'm trying to read the news or get ready to go do a break in, you know, 30 seconds. I'm like, okay, do this. But as far as what Kenny said,
Our 22-year-old multimedia guy who still finds, there's something gumming up the works here.
Well, I mean, I said from the beginning of the show, yeah, when you multitask, you can't focus as well on everything. But I'm going to come right back to my original point. Nowadays, you have to multitask. It's the nature of social interactions when you have Facebook, when you have Twitter.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I don't think I have a single friend in college who's not on Facebook. More than 50% of my friends are on Twitter. MySpace used to be the big thing, but that's sort of gone the way of the dodo nowadays. But it's...
You must do it.
You almost have to fit in. It's
Marcel, just at Carnegie Mellon, how do you hear that? On the one hand, you're saying there's a biological limit. There's only so much humans can do, period. On the other hand, we live in a social construct. Jack says he must do it. His generation must do it. Now, it's not the first time we've run up against that kind of thing in human existence, but what happens when you get that kind of confrontation?
Well, he's absolutely right, and one learns to adapt. So given this large amount of information, all these media available, I think the choice, there's several, you have to choose what you're going to have on at one time. Do you really want to be doing multiple things at the same time? Which ones do you have to share? Which ones are critical? And some things, you know, maybe you want to sacrifice your not very important conversation and be doing something at the same time. But if you're discussing some highly technical, important issue, that isn't the time to be sending a text message at the same time or even reading one. So let's go back to Dr. Nass's results. You know, it's the people who are high media multitaskers, as he refers to them, mm-hmm. are people who report having a many of these media information sources on or available at the same time. And then these people turn out to perform poorly in laboratory tasks. That's the finding. Mm-hmm. Now, it's possible that these people maybe shouldn't be labeled just high media multitaskers, but people who don't focus well. So all of us are faced in life, in work, with a variety of information sources, and you have to learn which ones are important, which ones you maybe you should turn off, and so on. It's conceivable that these people who are self-reported high media multitaskers don't have the wisdom to turn off some of these media at certain times.
Or they're in a social or work situation where they're more or less required to do it, even though the net may not be good. I want to try and get a couple more calls. Jack in Watertown, Massachusetts. Jack, you're on the air.
Hello, Tom. Hi, everyone.
Hi.
Tom, you mentioned a little bit ago the price that we might be paying. I wonder, have there been any studies done that show a positive correlation between the high prevalence today of ADD and multitasking? And as a follow-up question, is perhaps this diagnosis of ADD an evolutionary step, a propensity function that might make us more adaptable and suitable for multitasking in the future?
Very interesting. Professor Just, what do you say?
Well, I do think that there's a potential for learning. I don't think, you know, in certain situations, certain jobs, it's absolutely essential. An airline pilot has to attend to many, many things at the same time. Even a driver of a car has many things to attend to. Speed, other cars, lane maintenance, and so on. Life is multitasking.
But ADD as evolutionary adaptation, does that sound credible to you?
I don't know very much about ADD. I'd prefer not to comment on that.
But clearly, that's the kind of thing people are going to wonder about in their own minds. I have time for one more call. Fort Myers, Florida. Alan. Alan, you're on the air.
Yes. Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I wasn't really at all surprised to hear the results of the study. I don't know a lot about Zen, and I don't know the historical age of Zen teaching. And I know that
Alan, are you there?
Well, yeah. Yes. Hello. Can you hear me?
Yes. Zen. What about Zen?
Well, most of Zen is impenetrable to us here in the West, and perhaps to people in the East too. But there is one very simple Zen teaching, and that is do one thing at a time, do it very well, and move on.
Mindfulness, it's often described as. It's a good point of reference. Vivian, how about it? Can you live the Zen life and the multitasking life? Do you want to, or no thanks?
It sounds lovely, but you can't be Zen on deadline, you know? It sounds great, but at the same time, we have different meaning. We have different definitions of fulfillment. When I put the paper out at the end of the night, when we catch that story that nobody else caught, that's what makes me happy. That's what makes me feel fulfilled. Not just Zen, you know, not Zen, not being at peace, you know, not.
Maybe that is a kind of peace, right there, a kind. Mm-hmm. But boy, along the way, maybe not very Zen Buddhist. Clifford Nass, do you think that we might over time have a social evolution away from the acceptance of all this multitasking? If you're right, if it's in fact not working out in a measured, practical way so well, by your measure anyway, might we somehow move or act against it?
Well, if you look, since the Industrial Revolution, we've seen a steady growth in the amount of media people consume. It's one of the most steady trends we've been able to find in any social phenomena. Mm-hmm. And what basically happened was every time a new medium appears, it seems to not only take time away from other media, but take time away from non-media activities. And sometime around the 1980s, we sort of ran out of non-media time to steal from. And we now steal from other media time. So the answer seems to be no, it's going to be an inexorable growth.
Wow. Stay tuned, ladies and gentlemen. We'll see where this goes. Clifford Nass at Stanford University. Professor Nass, thank you so much for being here today.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Marcel Just at Carnegie Mellon. Thank you for joining us from Pittsburgh, Professor Just.
My pleasure.
And Vivian Ho at Boston University and Jack LaPierre at Emerson College. Good luck to you both. Keep on doing what you need to do.
Thank you.
Thanks for being here today. Thanks, Vivian.
Thank you.
Thank you, Jack.
Thank you.
Listeners, thanks for joining us. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.